Box A, Purpose and Terminology. Many objects in the real world have properties, but can also do actions. From a programming point of view, we can model object properties with variables, and we can model actions with functions. The idea is to merge data and functions into one code unit, which we call a class. So, unlike the structures we saw previously, which only contain data members, classes can contain both data members and functions. When speaking of a class function, we commonly call it a member function or method. Now, it should be pointed out that in actuality, a C++ structure can also contain member functions. We will get to the exact difference between a structure and class in a bit. We originally introduced structures with just data members as a stepping stone to our discussion of classes. So, to reiterate, classes can contain data members and member functions. Together, this allows us to conveniently model object properties and object actions in code. Note the distinction between a class and an instance of that class. A class defines a new variable type, whereas an instance is a variable of that type. A conceptual analogy, which is often used to explain the difference between a class and an object, is a blueprint. A house blueprint, for example, specifies how a house would be made, but it is not a house itself. The actual houses built based on that blueprint would be called instances of that blueprint. Similarly, a class specifies how a variable would be made, but it is not a variable itself. The actual variables built based on that class would be called instances of that class. When we declare a variable of a class, we say that we are instantiating an instance of that class. Box B, Example Class Syntax. So here we see the definition of a wizard class, which is similar to the previous wizard structure we saw, except we see a few new keywords, and we see member functions declared in the class. Note that this is the wizard class definition. We still need to provide the implementation for the member functions. Box C, public versus private. So what exactly are these public and private keywords we saw in the previous box? One of the methodologies of C++ is data hiding, which entails restricting access to certain data members in a class from external class code. In this way, a section of code cannot accidentally modify a data member and override its values. To facilitate this, C++ provides the public and private keywords. All the code that follows a public keyword up to a private keyword is public and can be accessed by code outside the class. All the code that follows a private keyword up to a public keyword is private and can only be accessed inside the class implementation. The public portion of a class is referred to as the class interface because that is the interface exposed to other code units. The private portion of a class is considered to be part of the class implementation because only the internal implementation has access to it. The general rule of thumb is that data members should be kept internal and only methods should be exposed publicly. The reason for this is simple. By making the programmer go through member functions, the class can safely regulate how the internal class data can be accessed and manipulated. Hence, the class can maintain the integrity of its internal data. Why does the integrity need to be maintained? Because the class methods most likely have some expectations about the data, and by going through member functions, it can enforce these expectations. Note that a class, by default, is private, and is the reason we must write public right at the top. On the other hand, a structure is public by default. This is the only difference between a structure and a class. Box D, Object-Oriented Programming. One of the key benefits of classes is that it allows us to better model real-world objects in code. We can take this idea further and start to think of all of our code in terms of objects, and then implement classes for each kind of object we need. This is essentially the idea behind object-oriented programming. For example, you might want to write a computer role-playing game. So you ask yourself, what are the objects? Well, for starters, the players are objects, the monsters are objects, the items are objects, the cities are objects, the dungeons are objects, and so on. Role-playing games typically are played with dice, so you have dice objects. You can think of the game itself as an object, so you have a general abstract game object, which contains all the other objects of the game. You can think of the rules of the game as objects, and the events of the game as objects. To represent all these kinds of objects, we will need to implement classes, which have data, but which can also perform actions. So you can see how a program can be broken down into objects, and then classes are made to define precisely what an object is and what it can do. This is object-oriented programming, where objects are the focal point. The advantages for this style of programming is fourfold. First, there is intuition. It is much more natural for us humans to think in terms of real objects than it is to think in terms of computer instructions and memory. This is especially true in large, complex systems. Second, object-oriented programming grants a natural organizational system. When creating these classes, all the related code associated with the class is organized in a tight code unit. That is, instead of having a lot of data variables lying around and manipulating that data through functions, we obtain a much more self-contained code unit of related code through classes. Third, with object-oriented programming, you can encapsulate data. That is to say, the class writer can enforce which parts of the class are visible to outside code and which parts should be kept purely internal. In this way, the class writer prevents users of the class from accidentally making destructive modifications to internal class data. Finally, object-oriented programming enables a higher level of code reuse and generalizations through facilities like inheritance, polymorphism, and templates. These last-mentioned topics, inheritance, polymorphism, and templates, are covered towards the end of this course.